Blog Talk Radio.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Right.
Look at yourself. Women love to show your adornment. Your breast is an adornment. Your buttock is an adornment. That's why in the Islamic world we cover you. Because the nature of a man, if he's a natural man, he's bound to be aroused looking at your boobs and your butt. You got garments cut so low that the babies start crying when they see you, thinking it's feeding time. You're in the screen, turning your backside to the TV and shaking and going on as though that's what God created you for. Shake your booty. Shake your booty. You have cheapened yourself as a creation of God. We've become so low down that God sees us as a dunghill. And we stink in the nostrils of God. What are you going to do about it, God? I'm going to chastise you. Grace is over. Mercy is over. The time for us to have atoned is finished. Now, it says, no burden bearer will bear the burden of another. Each one will bear his own burden. Now, let me tell you from what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told me. And what I wrote 36 years ago. He said, America will never rise to be an independent nation again. She won't have the power that she once had. He said, her money is gone. No more silver. After a while, she may even ask for copper. Her money is worthless. The wealth of the country is holding it up for a while. Soon you will see money piled and burning in the street. And there will be another medium exchange coming, not from this country. You see him sending the troops out now? Well, this is just the beginning. President Bush is manipulating these young children. The warmongers in his administration, the pro-Israeli Zionists, have literally gotten America's foreign policy to protect Israel. Now, many of you won't say these things. But that's on you. Daniel Pearl, or Richard Pearl, Wolfowitz, Crystal, all of these are architects of policy, and they are pro-Israel. One American congressman said, listen, foreign policy, the cornerstone of America's foreign policy, is the protection of Israel. Do you know why they want Iraq out of the way? Because Iraq is to the Arab world as Germany was to Europe. The most disciplined, highly technologically advanced, scientific people in the Arab world, you'll find them in Iraq. Iraq has never agreed with the taking of Palestine and giving it to Israel. Iran has never agreed. So who is the axis of evil? Iraq, Iran, North Korea, regime change. Preemptive war. I'm finished now. Once America goes to war, and within the next few weeks, she'll be in war. Now I'll tell you what you will look to see from what I've been taught. Do you see those millions that were protesting? Do you know why they were protesting? They want to stop a war. When they find that their protest meant nothing, and war begins, and innocent Iraqis die, and American soldiers, male and female, come back in body bags, the anger of the protesters will get worse and worse. In New York, at the protest, the police who were lionized after 9/11 became the instrument of Republican policy to block the streets so that the demonstration wouldn't look as big as it was, and the police were used as an instrument of policy. So when the innocent people who want to demonstrate had to clash with the police became the purveyors of pain to the protesters. This is going to get worse. And instead of people protesting now, their protests will turn to bloodshed. And in all the cities of America, watch, blood will be in the streets. And you, my dear brothers, who are leaders of street organizations, black, Hispanic, and Asian, I'm appealing to you to please stop the killing. Yes, because Homeland Security is designed to take you out. The same way you see tanks and helicopter gunships in Gaza and the West Bank, you'll see it in the south and west sides of Chicago, in East Los Angeles, and in Watts. America does not intend for you to destroy their future with your madness, even though they encouraged your madness. Now under Homeland Security, they will slaughter black people. Slaughter you, Mexican gang, Puerto Rican gang, Asian gangs. And you know what? It's written that you would deserve this. You know why you deserve it? God came to save you. Yes, sir. but you have become destroyers of yourself and your people.
Brother James, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I was wondering what had happened. Yes.
I could not cut it off for some reason. It just would not cut off. So I even texted Brother Kareem and told him to do it, but I don't know. It just kept playing. So the controls may be having an issue, but go ahead. Go ahead and proceed.
Okay. Well, let me say, before I apologize to all, I don't believe in accidents when the minister is expressing a word, so perhaps Allah wanted the people to hear what the minister was saying. But at any rate, the show has begun. Sister Charlene, are you still with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Praise be to Allah. Let me begin. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the one God to whom all praise is due, the Lord of the world, we thank Almighty God Allah for blessing us, the black man and the black woman of America and throughout the world, with a divine leader, teacher, and eternal guide, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we can never thank him enough, for through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we have been given that one of whom the scripture states is the spirit of truth, who has, is, and will guide us into all truth. The man of whom I speak is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. It is in their names, dear brothers and sisters, our guests and our listening audience, that we're very happy and honored to greet all of you with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, Assalamu alaikum, and we welcome you tonight to this edition of our show entitled Put on the New Man. We are very, very honored to host as our esteemed panelists our beloved and dear sister, who is a Final Call correspondent, Sister Charlene Muhammad. Our dear Sister Charlene Muhammad is a wife and a mother of two. She resides in Los Angeles, California. She is the national correspondent for the Final Call newspaper. The 17-year multi-award-winning international print and broadcast journalist, which she is also founder and executive producer. I'm sorry, I just got a call in. Let me deal with this. I have it cleared the screen. Please forgive me. Wow, we're experiencing these technical difficulties. Please forgive me, Sister Charlene.
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, let me, and when I get a call in, it removes the screen I'm reading from. But let
me finish.
Again, the 17-year multi-award-winning international print and broadcast journalist is also founder and executive producer and host of Liberated Sisters with Sister Charlene Muhammad, heard alternating Saturdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time on the Pacifica Network's 90.7 FM KPFK radio in Los Angeles, or at www.kpfk.org. She is also founder and executive producer of the Liberated Sisters Feedback Line, dedicated to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done. The Feedback Line airs Saturday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on another Clean Production the Sisterhood Connection. And that is at www.blogtalkradio.com/SION for life. And I wanted to get all of that out. We certainly encourage all of our radio listening audience and those of you who are online to participate in these most important media outlets through which we can get the message of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, as well as relevant message to the struggle to rise out of the condition that 400 years of slavery has rendered us in. And having said that, just want to give a little background for this week's show. Last week, in the final call, our dear sister wrote an article entitled "Beaten, Abused, Forced into Sex Slavery: How and Why Black Girls Are Increasingly Trapped in Prostitution." Now, this is something that we know is going on, and unfortunately, it becomes like graffiti. We see it, but we don't see it. We don't pay attention to it, given its occurrence in a field of so many other major crimes, which, of course, this is major. But since it happens so prolifically in the black community, it's not given the kind of attention that the heinous nature of this crime really, really deserves. I cannot tell you how moved I was at reading the words that laid out the statistics of this kind of activity going on and how it affects so severely all women, but particularly and specifically black women and our babies. And so I asked our dear sister if she would bless us by being a panelist on our show this evening to discuss the article and, of course, issues relating to that article, and in so doing, help or contribute to bringing this kind of crime to the forefront that it might get the attention it so richly and of a necessity deserves. So at this time, it is my great honor and privilege to introduce to some and present to others in our listening audience, both online and on the phone, our dear Sister Charlene Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Charlene.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you so much, Brother James, and to the production staff. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is his servant and messenger. And again, assalamu alaikum, and it's an honor to be here.
The honor is ours. Wa alaikum salam. And, of course, the honor and the gratitude is ours. I was viewing some alarming statistics regarding this kind of activity taking place in the United States. In an article that I found online titled "Washington State Office of the Attorney General, Human Trafficking," what I read was as follows. According to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, that is NCMEC, 100,000 to 293,000 children are in danger of becoming sexual commodities. The U.S. Department of Justice Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section reports 12 is the average age of entry into pornography and prostitution in the United States. I want to read that again. 12. The age of 12 is the average age of entry into pornography and prostitution in the United States. According to Shared Hope International, 8 of the 112 minors trafficked from out of state into Nevada for prostitution between August 2005 and December 2006 were from Washington State. Kind of activity. There's a plethora of statistics outlining this activity. However, I'll stop at those points allow you to come on in, dear sister. Please.
Oh, what? Yes, sir.
Is it Charlene?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Now,
pardon me. The headset. Sorry about that. I'm with you.
Okay. I was asking, after reading those three statistics, I wanted you to come in and then begin talking on those particular talking points.
Okay.
Did you hear them?
I did
okay.
hear them. I'm sorry. I thought you were saying you had more. Well, they're alarming, you know, Brother James. They're alarming. But of course, if there was one girl, that would be enough to
That's
also
right.
have the same impact because of what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan teaches and warns us of what happens. A life is ruined, and subsequent potential lives are ruined, but God can heal. But the damage done when there's molestation, when there's rape, much less rape and continued prostitution. So not only do you rape, but you allow others to rape, and then for profit, it's just a horrible, horrible thing. So as I'm listening to those statistics, the women that I've talked to, the survivors and the girls that are shown missing every day on Facebook now, increasingly black girls. You never used to see that. You never used to see or hear about us missing. It's not that our girls wouldn't be missing. It just wasn't news, you know. We didn't have networks looking for them. But there's an agency called Black and Missing but Not Forgotten, if I recall the name correctly. They're at the forefront of making sure that our missing girls and boys, you know, men and women, are pronounced and that the word goes forth. So, those statistics, you know, much like much of the other information that I received in writing that article, simply hurt. Matter-of-factly, they're painful.
To say the least, dear sister, I'd like to highlight the story that you, of course, captured in your article of our sister Jewel Lewis, who at 19 years old was victimized by this kind of trafficking. Now, at 33 years of age, she relates a story. And I want to read some of that story for our listening audience.
Yes, sir.
She states, "For me, this was 12 years ago, 2001, and I was 19. It's not a person approached her." Ma'am, I want to start at the right place.
Okay.
Okay, let me stop here. Start here,
yes,
rather.
Sir.
"For me, this was 12 years ago in 2001, and I was 19. He says she's referencing a man who offered her a ride as she was walking into a very dangerous neighborhood by herself.
Mm-hmm.
He says, it's not really safe out here. I'll never forget that because he used the word safe. Would you like a ride to the train station? He asks. His appearance and the word safe and the ride to the train station, which I was going to be walking about 6 to 7 blocks, it sounded really good, and so I took the risk. Waiting around the corner was a pimp and an enforcer with a gun. Thank God she just delivered her son to his father, she thought at the time. Her mind said, jump out of the car, but her body was slow to react. The pimp made things simple and clear. He knew where she lived and recited the address she longed for at that moment. Either she went with him or he visits her child, said the pimp. The threat was very real, recalled Ms. Jewel Lewis. Faced with protecting her son's life or her own, she surrendered, and at that moment, the grandfather, that elderly man that offered her a ride, handed the car back over to the pimp. Then the brainwashing began. Ms. Jewel Lewis said, he begins to make you feel like everything was your fault, just like predators do to victims. He says, you chose to get into the old guy's car, which you're already beating yourself up for. Like, why did I take that ride from the stranger, you think? The barrage continued. You chose to go with me instead of me hurting your child, and then the threat becomes, now you can sleep with me freely, or I can rape you or have these other people rape you, she recounted. Ms. Jewel Lewis now uses her play to show the fullness of the manipulation and to show people why she and many girls like her just couldn't walk away. For one, pimps isolate you, she said. In her case, the pimp forced her to call a family friend and tell her she was safe, but just needed a break and was doing her own thing. How many, she writes, African-American parents are getting that call from their teenager right now? I'm just doing my own thing. I don't want to come home. I'm with my boyfriend. Does that sound familiar? Ms. Jewel Lewis asked. Ms. Jewel Lewis used her captor's promise of bringing her back home to see her family as a source of hope to survive, but first she had to meet her quota, 3,000 in 30 days. That was 12 years ago. Nowadays, the average quota is 500 a day for each girl, she told the final call. The reality is we don't call it modern-day slavery for nothing. They use the same tactics as slave masters use on us as slaves, and we do it to our own people. And the worst part about it is that these predators, who are also often African American, not only do it to their own people, it's our children that they do it to. All right, I want to stop right there.
Yes, sir.
You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was very, very, very strict on women, from what I understand of the history. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, perhaps not as strict, but reinforces the principles and teachings that relate to the women who belong to Islam in America in terms of the MGT class and GCC class, and I'd like you, dear sister, to explain those acronyms to our listening audience, what they mean, what takes place in these classes, and how the protection of the knowledge that you receive from these classes under the direction of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan protects and provides safety against being victimized by this kind.
Yes,
now,
sir.
While,
I'm listening.
Okay. If you want to weigh right in, you certainly can. I was just going to make a statement as a point of information that we were going to go to our listening audience in a short while. This is primarily an audience-based show. We'd like to get the take on those who are listening on the phone as well as online, what they have to say, and we want them to direct you, direct their comments and questions, rather, to you. Now, this is a two-hour show, so you're going to be hanging with us for a while. I hope that's all right.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I understand.
And praise be to Allah. All right, the floor is yours, dear sister, and then after which we'll go to the phones and or to the online audience.
Yes, sir. Well, I would like to answer your question, do as you said, which is explain what MGT and GCC mean. The acronym stands for Muslim Girls Training and General Civilization Class, and this is the name given to the training of women and girls in North America. And we delve into the knowledge of subjects, seven training units, how to keep house, how to rear our children, how to take care of our husband. Some of those skills encompass cooking, sewing, homemaking is the term that society would put on it. And I think that is accurate. And I know that some modern independent women, which I would say I'm modern and independent, but it's an understanding of what that means, cringe when they hear that I work in media and in the community with women who label themselves as feminine. And I often say on my talk shows, there's also a different understanding or perception that people have of that. Because some would hear the word feminist and think man-hating. But, you get to the root of it, and that's not the case. There's femininity, and then there's feminist. And femininity, I think, has been hijacked. But not to digress too much, we deal with those things in class that return us to what actually civilized women do and mean, and what our root and our base is. And that's pretty much helped me, But what some people, and I don't want to teach or to come off as teaching here, I just want to explain MGT and GCC. Some people think that a woman's place is in the home. And that is true, but that she's not relegated as a slave and a prisoner there. The home is our base, and it's not necessarily our place. And so anyone in the audience who is not a member of the MGT and GCC already that wants to know more can certainly visit any local mosque, study group. Or if you see any of us, any sister, follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad under the direction of Minister Louis Farrakhan in the community, be sure, stop us and ask us, and we can direct you on how to find out more or take you with to our class.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm just waiting to make sure you completed your thought.
Yes, sir.
Praise be to Allah. Now, let's go to the audience to see if anyone has their hand up, as our dear brother Kareem likes to say, either online or either online or on the phone. Brother Kareem?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought Brother Kareem was here. Okay, go ahead.
He's on the phone, but I'm trying to host tonight.
We don't have
anyone on
good.
The phone right now, but we have a couple in the chat room. And KC wants to know, what is the name of the play that the sister you were speaking of has, if you know?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother James.
No. Go ahead and answer. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. And actually, her play is going to be, as I get the name, I want to give her the very accurate name. The play is actually going to be appearing in the Washington, D.C. area very soon, and we'll have more information about that. It's going to be in the 100-seat theater in Washington, D.C. It's coming up soon, Brother James. But, I'm looking for the name right now.
I have it. It's called The Seven-Layer Captive.
Thank you. And you know why I was having trouble putting it in my brain is because all doing this article, research time, 12 Years a Slave was everywhere I turned. We were talking about it, hearing about it, and I found myself getting her play confused with that. You might say, well, how could that be? You've written about it, but trust me, when you have so many different themes that you're researching, I didn't want to blurt that out. So thank you for saving me, Brother James.
That's quite all right, Jess. I know how these things can be. But again, the play is titled Seven Layers Captive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And more about her can be found at her website. Her Facebook page is Stacey Jewel Lewis, and she has a website, whoistolen.com, whoistolen.com. And Brother James, as we continue tomorrow on the KPFK Liberated Sister Show, she is scheduled to be a phone guest to talk more about her ordeal, as well as Student Minister Robert Muhammad of Mosque No. 54 in Compton.
Very good. Thank you for that.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, and we have a question from Sister Kathy. She said, what do you advise when they call and give these odd excuses for not being home or seen? How can one help them?
If I understand the question correctly, and thank you, Sister Kathy, for that in the chat room, what is advised when the girls or young women call home, as Stacey Jewel said she was forced to do? I'm understanding correctly?
Yes, ma'am, that's the question.
Yes. Okay. So according to what Stacey shared, it's believed, number one, that they are not coming home. But look deeper into the issue. For instance, in her case, and I'll try to channel her right now, but the way she gave it to me was like this person had her at gunpoint and told her everything to say. And what she thought on every issue was not the reason she learned later and she found out in study and healing later. So this person knew, and I'm getting this is engulfed in her question. This person knew from his experience, she said, that we're not typically checked on in terms of when we go missing. You know, oh, they ran away. People don't think we're taken, so, oh, well, she ran away. You know, fast, she's gone. And so that phone call did one of two things. One, it ensured that her family wouldn't go looking for her. He gambled on, and he was correct. I apologize. I don't mean to infer that her family didn't go looking for her. And he in isolated her in that way because I don't have an indication that they did not look for her, but it ensured him isolating her. Number two, he didn't want a police search out on her, you know? So he forced her to say, I'm out here doing my own thing, you know, I'm with my boyfriend. These are the things that girls are told to say, you know, and imagine she's a mother of a young baby, a toddler, right? So the appearance or the perception from what you're telling your friend is you left your baby. Okay, you left home, that's one thing. You're 19, you're legally adult, but you left your child. And so all of the barrage of judgment and what should have, could have, would have been done falls on her. And so genius, I would say, and not in a good way, but the evil genius of this is that he didn't have her call her mom or dad or her baby's father and say she was missing. It's effective if you call your little friend. You know what I'm saying? So when we get, God forbid, those calls, investigate it. Get the actual facts. File missing persons reports anyway. Try to stay in contact. Do whatever we can do to get the actual facts on, is this what's happening? You know, start immediately. I talked to a friend recently who went through something, not this, but it was traumatic, and she said, you know, sister, I turned into inch eye, private eye, tracking device, everything. And now people tell me when this happens to them, they're coming to me because the police didn't believe them in certain situations and they had nowhere to go. But I didn't want to take too long with that. I pray I've answered her question. Believe, number one, that they're not coming back, but find out why. The reason why they may say it, if it's similar to this conversation the little sister at the time had, was forced to have, find out why. If it doesn't sound like, we know our children. If my daughter, God forbid, calls right now, my niece, it could be a neighbor's friend. I know these children. If they call and say, I'm not coming back, I'm 19. Okay, well, what are the plans you were talking about before this phone call? What happens with those plans? What happened in your life in a day or an evening span, right? Because it was nighttime. She was taking her son to the father's house. What happened? So, Brother James, forgive me. I hope I didn't go too long, but investigate, in a word, investigate.
Not at all. Not at all, dear sister. Not at all.
Yes. And if you don't mind, Brother James, let me say this, and I very seldom share this story, but I've shared it before.
Mm-hmm.
I was kidnapped when I was 13 years old.
Mm.
And it was, by Allah's grace and permission, it was not a brutal incident. It was more like, a dispute between someone and my brother. So I wasn't sexually abused or, I wasn't physically battered or anything like that. But what I learned upon going to a trauma center, and, we hear white people do this all the time, but I found out from some other victims that had far worse incidents than I had that were at that center that this actually works. It's very beneficial. Families have to communicate, and you have to have passwords. Passwords are very simple and very, very effective. Even if she was given a script to say, at the end of that conversation, she might have said, tell grandma I love her and your grandmother is dead or something like that. That is a sign that something is wrong. And
awesome.
She doesn't have to say anything specific, that she would say something that only the parent or the sister or the best friend would know. And I just want to encourage parents, because I tell my juveniles every day, you have to communicate with your family, and you have to set up safety parameters. And passwords are very, very simple to do, but they could very well save your life. Because when children become of a certain age, yes, there are circumstances where they are pushed into peer pressure and things like that, that they want to run away for a night or two or disappear. Yes, those things do happen. But what about when they didn't quite happen like that and they are forced to provide a script and they're held at gunpoint? You have to have something that's going to bring you clarity, that's going to send up your antennas and say, hey, my child or my friend or my cousin or my granddaughter or somebody is in trouble, and you need to get law enforcement involved immediately. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, if you have this established and you tell a police officer that, hey, look, we got a password in our family, and the password is this, and this is what she said, and take down details. Details are so, so very important. When you get those strange calls, I'm going to tell you, take down the time and anything specific that you may hear in the background. A lot of people are so often to the conversation that they don't pay attention to the background, but the background noises can be very, very essential in finding someone. So, you have to really, really listen. And when you hear that hesitation of a person not being able to talk. You know, most metropolitan city police departments, they have online service. And if you can keep that person on the phone with just, you know, minute questions, well, girl, what's wrong with you, and blah, 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 you can still email 911 service while you're on the phone and let them know that you suspect a kidnapping. So I just want to put that out there because these are some things that people can do in the event that they suspect that something is going on like that.
I think that is absolutely beautiful, and it brings to mind what I want to do for tomorrow, like post resources and ideas and information, just like what you shared, sister, because it's absolutely true. He took her immediately to New York. If I recall her correctly, it was at a payphone where the call was made, but took her immediately to New York. But you're right. There can't be enough planning about this. In Compton, one of the activists who did a march with the Fruit of Islam and the NAACP and other groups was cautioning everyone that, you know, you got to get, like, with her experience with some of the young ladies in Compton, she said, you have less than 3 minutes, if not you're dealing with a minute, to get your spill out to them. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever you're going to say to these girls, because she said she had had conversations and tried to, you know, here's my number, you know, you need anything, want to provide help, and has come back in the next day or the day after, and the girl is bruised and beaten. You know, I'm beaten up for talking to you. And so you're absolutely, oh, God, that is such good advice. Just, and I'm thankful to Allah that you, your situation was not worse than being taken. I'm so glad, you know, and thank Allah for that.
Yes,
wow.
Ma'am. All praise is due to Allah. But, I just want to encourage people that, you know, also let me say this to any young girl. You know, the times, of course, are very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to tell you, 9 times out of 10, and this is just 9 times out of 10, and you're going to do only what your instincts tell you to do, and I could never, ever guide you in what your instincts are going to be at the time. But I will advise you in this day and time that if anyone is trying to forcibly kidnap you and they pull a gun on you and they tell you not to resist, resist anyway. And I'm going to tell you why. Because, and I don't want to sound barbaric or anything like that, but 9 times out of 10, if they're going to hurt you, they're going to hurt you anyway. I'd rather somebody hurt me trying to get away than for you to take me somewhere and torture me to death or whatever. If you can see where you can make a commotion and you can get out, always try to get out, because more than likely they're going to brutalize you anyway and have the mindset to be ready to take some pain. Now, I know that sounds strange, but I got this from a police officer. Because the police officer said that almost 93% of the victims that comply with the kidnapper, they end up being tortured. And that it's always best to fight for your life. Now, that's what the police officer told me. And as I work with my juveniles, I share that with them. And so, you know, it's almost like jumping out of a car. You have to prepare that you might be in some pain, but at the end of the day, you may very well survive, especially if you wait until you get to a crowded place. And I know fear is overwhelming. Fear will make you shut down. The thought that somebody's going to kill your baby, the thought that somebody might kill you, that fear can be overwhelming. But you have to have a different level of faith to battle that kind of fear. You know, when I say I fear no one but Allah, I mean that thing. And because I tell you, I was 13 years old, and the guy pulled a gun on me, and I was like, dude, shoot me. I'm not going with you.
And while I'm arguing with him, somebody else grabbed me. But, I mean, you know, that I was blessed. I still was blessed in that situation, but I did not surrender. And he was not going to make a commotion because we were actually in kind of sort of a public place. You know, I was at a storefront, and, you know, it wasn't that many people around. But if the guy hadn't grabbed me and gagged me at that time, I probably could have made enough noise and got away. So
right.
I'm telling people, you know, depending on the situation, you know, really it's not safe. You're safer fighting than you are complying in most cases. But I can never direct what your instincts are going to be. But I will tell you to fight for your life and make as much noise as possible. And that's how
I agree, sister. Sister, I agree. I thank Allah for what you're pouring out because it's again, we don't ever want to see you again. So see you dead now and see you dead later, but fight for your life. Now, I know that was coward sounding, and I haven't been in those shoes. I just haven't been, you know, but I agree with we don't submit to evil. We just don't submit to the devil in physical or spirit form. And so I tell my children, scream, kick, fight, bite.
That's right.
Run, do what you need to do. Of course, there's more strategic training that we can, and we also do give them. But at the end of the day, because you're right, sister, everyone's mindset is different. Everyone's thought, fear level, the fear factor, those resources, those tools you're sharing that you've learned in terms of if you're taken, how to get away, we pray that none hearing this would have to experience that. But we also do know that, you know, evil lurks. And our children as well as adults are being taken, boys as well as girls. This article, as I shared with Brother James and I'm still telling the editor, so insensitive, you know. Again, it's not a new issue, but the way that the survivors and the advocates who are fighting this issue talked about it, and to see when we walked with the community and the FOI in Compton that our sisters who are experiencing this, when the walk was moving down the boulevard, you know, the hope was that people could talk to them, give them information, receive information for anyone who wanted to do otherwise. Our sisters were running. Ask anyone in Compton who might have been there, call Brother Robert, they were running. Some of the girls, the young ladies were running. One or two couldn't do too much running because of just the little heels that they had on and the attire. But I was angry because people say, you know, final call doesn't know what pimping is. Some of the response, you know, these women are, the sisters out there volunteering. Well, that's not one in their right mind. I'll say it right now. Because no little girl born is born with the thought that that's what she is going to be doing with her body. That was put in her,
that's
you
right.
know. But they that's were right. taking the so-called heat. You know, no one was mistreating them. The community was just walking along the property and dealing with the hotel owners who rent for this, but they were, I saw the woman fleeing. So whomever, male and unseen entity has them out there are not there to take that brunt, and that really upset me. But I don't know if I expressed that with you before, Brother James, but it was just the whole predicament that our women are in.
Yes, absolutely.
Is, you know, and I'm not here to condemn them, judge them, none of it. I just wanted to raise awareness about the article because too often society, we do that, you know.
Right.
But we condemn them but also make money off of them. There's mm-hmm. a show on TV, TV One, Kathy Hughes' network, Love That Girl. It used to have Tatiana Ali on it. Now the so-called uncouth sister, I'm unique, is the star. I don't know what happened to Tatiana Ali. Hopefully she woke up. Apparently she did or whatever happened, but she saved from that show. It's just vile, you know. There's pole dancing and all kinds of other things, you know. The culture. I mean, I was looking at a commercial. Oh, God, I wish I could remember the name of the commercial. Just now with my daughter. A store commercial. But there's adults and young children, diverse, you know, bent over, slapping their backside. I'm saying, okay. It's a commercial. So, I brought up to the point of not condemning, you know, because we're being victimized. And as Stacey Jewel Lewis said, believe that it's happening. You know, the number one thing, especially in the Black community, and particularly in America, is that we can point to Thailand and other places where people book sexcation. Prominent to poor men, primarily white, book vacations, pedophiles, they go, and it's joked about. It's talked about on cable network news TV. You have a plane to go over here and do this. And so we have to believe it's happening. And as she says, and unless you believe it, people won't do anything about it, you know. But, you know, sometimes you hear people say it's a rite of passage into manhood, you know. Unless you had a partner. I'm not a man, but I hear, you know, men talk. You know, unless you had a prostitute, and especially a Black one, you haven't crossed over into manhood, you know, or we have the girls sit here, you know, courtship or dating protocols, and yes, I agree, and I'm with all of that, but guess what? Mustafa, 10 years old, you get the same dialogue. There's not a show your oats for you as a boy. You got to learn it as a girl. I just am not like that, and I think if we take that attitude on more, and as Minister Farrakhan said, make the men that we want for our girls, and as well make the wives that we want for our sons. It starts with us. It's a complicated issue, but at the end of the day, it's wrong, and there is something that can be done about it.
I thank you. And Sister Aziza, thank you also for your candor, your openness in relating to us some of that relevant history to the subject matter concerning yourself, and for the subsequent guidance that you offered to us and to our listening audience. I'd like to read another excerpt from your article, dear sister, that highlights contributing factors to this situation. You know, the sister, Jewel Lewis, she states that part of the reason Black girls are targeted is they don't look 12 years old when they are, she said. We are 12. We will be 13 and 14. But if you see that girl and you put lipstick on her and fishnets on her and a certain outfit on her, that 12-year-old will look 22. So that's one reason our girls are targeted, because they look of age when they're not of age, she explained. I wanted to highlight or repeat that excerpt because I wanted to underscore the importance of outward appearance. Certainly, we're not trying to make the victim or criminalize or blame the victim. However, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taught us and teaches us, particularly our women, it is the garment that sends that initial thought into the mind of a man who is looking on a woman and how she is dressed. And again, I'm not saying that this justifies at all their evil intent or their evil action. But it's very true. As a result of the denatured food, the transgenic and genetically modified food that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has exposed in his recent lecture series of The Time and What Must Be Done, these hormone-possessed foods make the child, the female, mature much more quickly than normal. And so at mm-hmm. those ages, unfortunately, they are developed in an otherwise womanly kind of development. Mm-hmm. And so it's very, very important, the garment, the dress mm-hmm. that our young girls are wearing. So that's a message to the mothers. Also, I'd like to read, another reason, she states, is the black community is notorious for not reporting missing teenage girls, often because the girls are in the foster care system. Ms. Jewel Lewis said, typically no one's looking for them, and they're categorized as runaways, she continued. Now that's something. I'd like to also read something else, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
You know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has stated that Martin Luther King Jr. has said that there are crimes being committed in the black community and in the black neighborhoods. However, he states that they are derivative crimes. And what is written in your article, as you quote Ms. Claudine O'Leary, founder of Rethink Resources in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the Young Women's Empowerment Project in Chicago, she states, pimps thrive off of the situations that already exist. They didn't create the 50% unemployment rate. They just took advantage of it. They didn't create the situation where the youth are sexually abused before they turn 10, 11, or 12. They just take advantage of it. They don't create the situation where youth are pushed out of school. They just take advantage of it, Ms. O'Leary argued. What youth really need and want are 24-hour drop-in centers. Otherwise, the cycle will continue. Now, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan stated in his historic Savior's Day address when he reintroduced for the first time the economic blueprint of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And as he relayed this information, highlighting and illuminating the economic blueprint, he recited these statistics. The federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour, but nearly 7.7 million people are known as the working poor, workers who have incomes that put them below the poverty line. In several cities, the jobless rate for black men is well over 50%. And for black teenagers, it's well over 40%. There are 49 million people, 16% of the American population, who are now in poverty, and 11 million of them are black. Although blacks represent 13% of the general population of the United States, they represent 28% of the poor population in this country. This is the largest number ever recorded. There are 10 million American children in poverty, whereas 39% of black children under 18 years of age live in poverty, and 32% of households headed by single women. There are more than 5 million more women than men who live in poverty. Here again, they take advantage not of situations that they created, but situations that exist. Again, the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. stated, it is incontestable that there are crimes committed in the black community and in black neighborhoods. However, they are derivative crimes. That is to say that they derive from situations that the members of those neighborhoods, the residents of those communities, did not create. So I wanted to share that with our listening audience as we move on with this timely subject. I'm still very much moved over the reality of what is happening
to
our women.
Me too, Brother James. Moved, angry. I got to get deal with this anger here. But, you know, because as you gave the information, it's just overwhelming and it's irrefutable. But the one thing that sticks out continuously in what I'm reading, what I'm hearing, even in stories I'm researching now that have nothing directly to do with this issue, but I'm seeing so many links and just the schemes and machinations of Satan and how we are falling prey and more thanking Allah for what we know the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are right and exact, and Islam is our way out of all of the problems, not some of them, all of them. You know,
yes,
from what you shared and also what was shared by experts and advocates in the article, the picture, you know, and it brings to mind that, as we're taught, 75% of the work is with the woman, you know, and that a nation can rise no higher than its woman, because the brunt seems to be falling on black women. Now, we know that, you know, the statistics can say what they want to say, but where the black man goes, the black woman goes, and where the black woman goes, the black man goes. Neither
That's
can
right.
rise higher or be well without the other. So regardless of the statistics, it's just unnerving, you know, the poverty statistic. And so ignorant ones can say, oh, well, you know, if it's not dealt read right, you know, or if it falls on ignorant ears, you know, women, black women, are responsible for the poverty in their household. You know, poverty leads to other things, homelessness or runaway or high school dropout, illnesses, lack of nutrition. And so the households are empty in terms of men. Not all, for those who might chat or call and say, oh, I'm here. Well, we got you, brother. We're not talking about you. We're talking about those households where the woman is the head for circumstances she's falling victim to, but are definitely part of the grand scheme and design of Satan to tear up and bust up the black family, the original family. The dress, you know, we know certainly it is true that if we, as we say, cover down and invoke modesty into our wear, as Minister Farrakhan says, visit our mothers and our grandmothers. Well, he said grandmothers. I don't think he said mothers, because these days my mothers are so young. But visit
That's
your mother.
Right.
Yeah, and we're in the club right along with the daughter. Visit your grandmother's dressing room, you know. I would love to believe, you know, and the chances are slim, somewhere there's a fool that's attempting to violate a woman that's covered down, you know. So, but that warning and reminder and that caution is true. 9 times out of 10, they'll think twice, and it is a protection. People mimic women who cover, spiritual women, not just Muslims. They mimic women who cover. But it is true. The cat call might not come this way, and especially if we're dressed properly in the garments. And so there's just so much that we are responsible for. But we have to stay in the front of our protection as much as we can as black women, especially when we have a high rate of single-family households. And so, you know, we must respect and protect the black woman. Well, that's not a charge for men. We should be responsible for our first and foremost self-preservation.
That's right.
So in partnership with, you know, I really pray that I'm coming across as coherent here, but, you know, I just have, you know, people told me, you come off as aggressive, and when you start talking about women and men. You have this women live stance. No, I do not. I am a follower of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. No, I do not. But I'm very mindful. But, you know, because what is being done has been done. And although, as the article said, she points out black men. It was black men who did this to her.
Yes.
We know why. They didn't just wake up one morning doing this.
That's
you know,
right.
So there's a whole lot that's laid at the foot of Satan. But sometimes we can't see, or our people can't see, as Minister Farrakhan teaches us, who the real enemy is, because we have this upfront, up close and personal reality. In Sister Queen Aziza's case, there's a root, there's a cause of what her brother's friend did to her. He was an effect, you know.
Yes.
I'll stop, Brother James, and I'll stop right there.
Thank you, dear sister.
I
see you, as we say, dear sister. I, as a grandfather of a little girl whom I love dearly, I have a daughter whom I love dearly. I have sisters whom I love dearly. I can definitely feel you, your passion and your concern about this. And even though, as you stated, it was black people that did this to our sister, black men who did this to our sister, yet she writes, or you wrote, according to her statement, I can say all but the majority of these young African-American girls and white and Asian girls' clients are white males, white men, white lawyers, doctors, politicians, family men, anyone you can think who are raping our children every day and arresting them. That is what we're fighting against. Miss Jewel Lewis said also, another statement, pimps know well how to navigate the hood because society glamorizes the lifestyle, but society is sending the wrong messages and images to children growing up in poverty, she continued. You have clothing that advertises pimps and whores. You have Halloween costumes that advertise pimps and whores. Children have tatted bras, G-strings, and thongs marketed to little girls. And when it comes to our music, we have 3-6 Mafia. It's hard out here for a pimp. It was in the movie Hustle and Flow. And I might add that this song won an Academy Award. Can you imagine? It won an Academy Award.
I can. Brother James, as you continue, remember, Will Smith and other conscious rap artists used to, they waged the battle, remember. They waged the battle to be acknowledged when they won their Grammys, to be acknowledged during the main show in the evening. Remember, they would announce, the institution would announce this hip hop or this rap category, which it was budding, you know. Remember, considered monkey music, jungle music. Whites didn't like it, and blacks certainly turned their backs on it, you know, and primarily black Christians. That brings to mind Kirk Franklin. I say many of the gospel hip hop artists today owe him a debt of gratitude because he really fought to get that genre of gospel in. But I digress again. Here we go. So Will Smith and them argued and won. But it wasn't because the Awards Academy was sensitive to what they wanted. They realized that they could use that by giving them that greater platform. And now we see the demise where a conscious rap with hijacking and gangster rap and all of this other stuff coming. So now you have, what is this, a Don Juan Bishop pimp character on stage with Green Hatchin and Ben Colton, these Pimp Cups. But what I'm saying is that they used to fight. And then once they got in, it just all went down. So, yeah, 3-6 Mafia would have never, ever been in the category.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that they, along with the movie, could be used. You know, one thing that comes to mind, going back just a step, when we talk about the clothing and our size, right? So when I was a little girl, the hormone, the food wasn't as bad as it is now, and so I wasn't overgrown, but I've been tall, very, very tall, family of giants. My mother used to dress me at 13 and 14 in pink T-shirts with skates on them because I love the skates. And, yes, some people listening, especially my daughter was listening now, she would flip out like, your mom dressed you at 13? Meaning, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's
everything. Right. Like, some things my daughter can pick out because she knows what she can have and what she can't. But my mom came home with the clothes. We didn't go shopping. And, you know, I'm not that old, right? But little puffballs, hair comb way high with puffballs, big barrette knockers or bright ribbons, and baggages. And I would still receive the cat calls, clearly a little girl. And so I learned, if I went one way to the corner store or to my grandmother's house, right, and called the penny candy store, then I would face the hecklers. If I went the other way, then there was a mentally challenged. We know now what that is, but we were scared. We just thought it was this crazy woman, and she would chase you. So I'm not trivializing it. I'm certainly not put in a position at that time as Stacey Jewel Lewis, but to a little girl, it's like, which way do you go? So I would go towards the catcalling. But the thing that would save me from them bothering me further than an ignorant one or two whistling at me was the others would say, oh, that's Bob's daughter. You know, my father had a very good reputation. And they left me alone. But anyway, I just thought about that, you know. My mom tried as much as she could to dress me down for my height, and it didn't work to a degree. So I think that is, I just long for the day, you know, we're taught not to pray for Allah's chastisement, right? And so I said that to say, on the other hand, I pray for the day when the brothers will be able to just stop that, you know, tell the sisters, which the gauntlet will come down on my head, number one, because I'm out all over the place, different times of the day, you know, 10 p.m., 11 p.m., 1 a.m. at different places, you know, for good reason, but still, our curfew is 10 o'clock, right? Assignment notwithstanding, but I'm saying that to say I look forward to the day when the soldiers, FOI, are out and telling them, you get in the house, because some of us are going to have that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be here. Oh, really? The bar? No, ma'am. And I'm not talking about MGT, where the order of the day will be righteous discipline on deck. I just envision that off.
Oh, back. No, you don't have to apologize, dear sister. This is your show. You know, you are our guest.
Yes, sir.
And
yes,
sir. We certainly want to hear. Oh, go right ahead, dear sister.
Thinking about another way we fall into the trap, you know. I heard a dialogue between some young girls one day, and one of them, you know, was telling another, you haven't had your first kiss yet? This is a 13-year-old talking to a 15-year-old. So I go over and say, excuse me, ma'am. Let's talk about this. And that conversation went all over the place, but they talked, which was great, but it was astonishing. And but not so much so, because peer pressure is very serious today, and the pressure is for different things, you know. It's not for, you know, snatch that candy and run, or, you know, come on, let's go to the dance. It's steal this, rob that, you know. It's very serious offenses with very serious consequences. But Delita Miller, one of the advocates that I talked to, she used to be what she calls a sex worker. stripper, and what, you know, prostitute, but they call it the politically correct term, the sex worker. And her daughter fell into the sex trafficking trap. And so I asked her, sister, do you think that it was anything that she saw in the life that you chose as an adult? And I want to say something about that chose very shortly because it seems to contradict what I said earlier about they don't choose it. I want to really talk about how she, quote-unquote, chose her life that she thought what she was independent and deciding upon. But she said no, you know, because my children never saw that. They didn't know what I did. They just knew I was nice, to be home, or number, or call me. They never saw that, she said, to my utmost knowledge. What happened was her daughter, who's 16, that had a little girlfriend who's 13. I'm still trying to figure out. This is a pretty strong-minded 13-year-old to allegedly pull your daughter into the life, but it could be done. It could be done. Some 13-year-olds have more street knowledge than I've ever had in all of my years. But pulled her into the life, going out with her, and all of a sudden there's the 13-year-old's boyfriend, right, Brother James? Next thing you know, they're at a party in a gated community. The mom said, you can't, I don't know why we think a gated community is a safe community. It's safe from outside element, okay, but who's in your neighborhood inside? Your refuge isn't a lot, you know?
That's right.
I have to admit, it's the physical appearance of safety. But again, who's in the house next door? You don't know what's going
on.
So you're gated. You just keep, you know, you want the other crime out. But anyway, they're in a gated community. The mother thought it was safe, and I understand that. The cop brings the daughter home, 12 a.m. or 1 a.m., and basically tells the mom, this is what I found her with, was one, a condom and other things. This is who I found her with. And this is basically what they were doing. And so we can see she's not really in this life. Here's your daughter. Okay, so the mom is starting to do a self-esteem check on her. You're beautiful. You have this, your goals, anything you need. You know, this is what you can do in life. You don't have to settle for this. Who are these people? So now the mom's checking deeper into the little 13-year-old and all of this stuff. And so even after the talk, the next night, the daughter asked if she can go out with him again. Mom says no, and the woman, you know, goes to her room. She said, I thought I had reached her, you know, because there was no argument, no anything. It's like, okay, Mom. Went to her room. Mom goes to her room. She said in an hour her spirit told her she's not here. And her mother went to check the room, and the girl wasn't there. And she went out canvassing the community for her baby and didn't find her. And then there's another arrest. And the girl was caught up into two cases. And the mom told me that what struck her most was seeing the 13-year-old in handcuffed, shackled, jail gear, being charged with prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
And the boyfriend, pimp, you know, nowhere to be found. How does that happen? I don't know, but as Suleiman Nuruddin of Men Stopping Violence says in the article, and they're based in Atlanta, where our brother student minister Sharif Muhammad and the believers of Mosque 15, as we know, are, he said that contacting and connecting with the Johns, the men who purchase the sex, is a major key in ending the problem. Other people say, get rid of the supply.
Mm-hmm.
But the survivors tell me, and the advocates say, that the pimps say, we don't chase them, we replace them, because there's a victimized woman or girl somewhere. Now, back to the word chosen, I don't want to forget that, Brother James, and thanks for allowing me to go back to that point. Delita Miller says, you know, it was her lifestyle. You know, she was a sex worker. But when I dug deeper with her into her life, I said, "Well, how did you get into it? Why did you choose to do this?" She was pregnant for, you know, teenage mother, and didn't have money or didn't have diapers for the baby. And so begging the baby's father for diapers, begging the baby's father for diapers. Her friend, another male friend, tells her, you're, you know, pardon me, but you're effing with these niggas, you know, and you're struggling for diapers. You might as well get paid if you're going to do that. Here we go. Boom. The thought is in her mind. So she tells me, so Sister Muhammad, he put me up on game. And I'm sitting here saying, wow. That word she chose, no, she didn't. Yeah, there's culpability there. But again, she was introduced to that. But if that brother, friend of hers, what if he could have introduced her to something a bit more righteous? There was something else that he could have offered her, but all he offered her was that. And so, therefore, it's in her mind, yeah, that's right. And so her daughter is okay, you know, her daughter is. I didn't go into their story deeply into the article because although she was willing to give her name, she wanted to as much as do her daughter. And I said, sister, if people know you and you give your name, you're gonna out your daughter. But the other thing is Stacey Jewel Lewis was so compelling. She was so compelling because it was the dichotomy of she took the ride. So automatically the fingers point at you, you're to blame. But I wanted her, and the editor, thank God he approved her voice too and accepted the story, is because she's not to blame. She's not to blame alone. It's illogical to say that she isn't to blame when, if she didn't get in the car, truth be told, they probably would have had to outright forcibly kidnap her, right? There is a responsibility on her part, but oh no. You know, I didn't ask her. I tried very hard to understand and do, because I thought it was right to do what active advocates shared when I talked to them. Well, Sister Muhammad, you know, we don't really, you know, subscribe to prostitution because we want to own our survivorship. We believe we're victimized. We believe that women, even adults, are victimized, but we say survivors, right? They use the term more sex trafficking because they're taken away. This sister was taken from D.C. to New York, you know, and as we said, you know, her first. One of the first, the next atrocity that she sees a pimp with girls in a dog cage. What are you kidding me? I'm telling you, it was hard to get through the phone interview with her. It was very hard. It was like watching a movie. I told her I could see the movie play out. You know, we're accused, black folks are accused of talking to the screen. I don't think we're the only one. I do. I would be having pure dialogue. I don't really watch a lot of movies with people. Because I talk through and through and through and through and through and watch it as much as I want. But at any rate, so they've taken back a lot of the terms, but I tried not to ask questions that would make me seem judgmental. But the fact is, I was asking all kinds of questions. Why, in my head, why are you having to bring the baby to the father's house this far away at night? Why isn't he coming to get the father? I didn't ask that. But I'm thinking that, but it's a dynamic, apparently, that they had to have. So why ask why, you know? I was reserving my questions with the time I had with her to get to the meat. But everything just points back at what I'm trying to say is the social problem, the socioeconomic deficiency. And absolutely. As my sister said, Brother James, I cried when she said, I took the risk. I was tired. I had to go about 9 blocks through riffraff. It was going to be a rough walk. This man looked like a grandfather. She thought she could take him. All of that, you know. Who doesn't get tired? Who doesn't get tired? I can see that. So should she be kidnapped pimp, all of that, because she's tired? She shouldn't be, but it's like saying, should we be raped because we have on a miniskirt? We shouldn't be, so we have to protect ourselves. Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, that
makes you upsetting. I know it was. It was upsetting to me reading it. You know, and this speaks to another problem, which, of course, this is a symptom of, and that problem deals with men. You know, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that there is no such thing as a no-good woman.
No good woman.
Every no-good woman was made no good by a no-good man.
No good man. Yes, sir.
And that, of course, is a subject matter for another show, but that is why it is so important to engage in the re-education and the retraining and resurrection, reformation of the black man, particularly here in America, but throughout the world, and in fact, the whole of masculine humanity needs resurrection. Okay, dear sister, as we're moving towards, we're well into the last half hour of the show, I want to go back to the audience, and of course we'd like to hear from you too, Sister Aziza, if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question. But let's go back to the audience.
I am so full on this topic. It would take me 2 hours to just really, really cover down, because I can. I know this situation backwards and forwards and in my sleep. And I'm from Compton, so yes, ma'am. South Soul Lakers and Muriel Drive, sis. And I just remember all of those things. So my mind is spinning right now. But let me ask this question of Brother Abraham. He's had this question for a long time, and I didn't respond to you, Brother Abraham, because I wanted to yield to Sister Charlene and let her answer your question. Brother Abraham says, how does our Nation of Islam programs and training aid those of us who participate and would be an aid to those who yet have no such education and training? Could we expand on that a little? Now, I'm not clear, because he did make some other comments pertaining to your topic, and I guess what he's saying is that, you know, how do we implement the training that we have to the general public who are oblivious to the type of training we have, I guess, in terms of security as well as modesty. And I want to talk about the men, but I'm going to hold my peace right now and yield to Sister Charlene on Brother Abraham's question. I'm going to hush. I'm going to pray on it, and then I'm going to say what I got to say, because I can't hold it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sister. We are, like, vibing, but I'm being very, I'm trying to be refined, Islam dignified, but I'm serious. I might need to start videotaping my writing and research process, you know, because the emotion and the range of emotion, cooled and not so cooled, but also just the information that comes that never really makes it to the article is something that I'm going to have to do something with, publish or document somewhere, because there's a backstory to the story, you know.
Well, sister, let me just give you this tidbit of advice. You know, we are taught to rise above emotion.
Indeed.
However, Allah has a wrath, and that wrath is created and developed out of anger. So, you know, a lot of times people say, you know, well, you're supposed to rise above emotion. You're not supposed to be angry. Anger is a natural emotion. You are supposed to be angry when something is an abomination to God himself. You mm-hmm. don't have to apologize for that emotion. Now, mm-hmm. you can be passionate in your expression, but don't let anyone tell you or make you feel that you have to apologize for being angry about the atrocities that we are still facing right here today in the hills of North America. Do not apologize because of the behaviors that have been inflicted upon our black men to perpetrate upon black women. You don't have mm-hmm. to be apologetic about being angry about the outcome of the devil's process because mm-hmm. you're supposed to be angry about that.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
And, no one is going to tell me to rise above emotion. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that a nation can rise no higher than its woman. And if you think that the white man does not study what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, you're wrong. Because if you look at how he's moving in contrary to what the messenger taught in order to try to defeat him. And he still don't know that Allah is going to be victorious in spite of everything he tried. But let me shut up because now I'm getting emotional.
But as you're saying, to each his own, and it's understandable. And the reason I yeah. said it, well, let me say this first. I'm going to say this, and then I want to hear from you because I really want to hear what you have to tell Brother Abraham. But,
that's
but
right.
What I want
to say. I want you to forget to answer Brother's question because he has
to. Oh, yeah,
no,
I'll say something.
I'm sorry.
The answer to his question for me is very simple. Let me stay on the point you're on. The reason I said rise above emotion is because, and my brother Jesse Muhammad, our brother, he teases me and gets on me, and he's a good reminder for me. But you know, when Minister Farrakhan talks to us, and he said several times before, but one time he had a lecture, he was talking to us, and he said, you know, get so angry I could cuss. I don't know if you all remember that, but and then in another instance he talked to us about he was using language and he said, you know, what is that angel with that hot coal? Remember that one? So I said that to say because I get that way. And I always think about the minister of Brother Jesse and be like, where's that hot coal? Because I'm like, I'm sorry, Brother Jesse, but it's just really, because most of the male and female victims who deal with this have been sexually abused. Somebody in the home, a family friend, a father, a relative, in Antoine Fisher's case, a female babysitter, you know, it's violation
yes,
of us by us. But in answer to the, and again, you know, I've written numerous stories. I've written about abuse before, but this was different. And I'm still searching about why. I think part of it has to do with all of the voices that came together and shared. But that Stacey Jewel Lewis, the way she told me, what she told me, and her survivorship, that these people didn't win. She's winning, and she's helping, as many others are doing, to pull resources and educate people. And the FOI, you know, in Compton and all over the nation, just by going out on Monday night, standing up to attack the issue of prostitution, among other things, not just that, but that they would take up that banner, you know. People are not fighting for black women. Like black women, in some cases, but like the black men in the nation are fighting for black women. And so that, you know, I just had to be on that one battlefield with them. People were like, sister, you on the FY push? I'm like, no, I'm on the final call assignment. Get it right. Someone's got to tell the story. So that's why I'm here. And the NAACP branch president, Paulette Simpson Gibson, was the only woman who was on that walk. And she didn't want to
at a certain point when I had enough for the article, we were trying, I was saying, Sister, are you tired? You ready to go? I wasn't tired, but I didn't, you know, this was an FOI push after all, but I had enough for my assignment. And she wanted to go the whole way, and she did. When the brother stopped, she still wanted to stay. I'm like, Sister, they're about to have class. We need to go. But at the end of the day, I'm saying the answer for the brother is teach the knowledge of self. That's mm-hmm. the program. Because the women that people say and the women who say themselves that they chose this life, teach the knowledge of self and let them revisit what they actually chose, who they were before some slick, wicked, deceiver, serpent, in black or white or whatever other faith. It could come in your girlfriend face. It could come in the face of a relative who's getting paper, as the street said, you know, in this life. You know, Satan always comes when you're struggling or when there's sadness or weakness or a problem. You having a separation with your spouse? Guard yourself. Put on the whole armor. He's coming. So let there be rent late. You know, these sugar daddy and sugar mama conversations that go on and people laugh and joke about, these are all part of the problem. But these are the immediate problems. Causes that we could see, but we have to dig deeper. So the program of the Unblock Mama, teach the knowledge. Teach the pimp, or so-called pimp, the knowledge, and teach the victim or survivor the knowledge of themselves. That's my answer.
Thank you, Queen. And we're going to take a question from the line. So area code 314. Your mic is live.
As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam.
Alaykum salam, Brother Kareem.
Yes. Well, as always, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, and I'm going to keep this real short. First of all, I want to say I've enjoyed the entire broadcast, and I do agree with Sister Charlene about teaching what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught us. However, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of, I want to say this, of practical application, because mm-hmm. we can use words all the time. Mm-hmm. And most mm-hmm. of us who will listen to words and respond, we're already well on the path. However, mm-hmm. those who are out in the street and who are dealing with these economic situations, these abusive situations, mm-hmm. they need something physical that they can deal with.
Right.
And I share that because one of the things that, and my brother's out of town right now, but hopefully when he comes back, if he comes back, one of the things we did through Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program, we had a lot of young individuals, brothers and sisters, because they are into the music and into the hip hop. We offered them, again, like I say, practical application. A lot of them that are out there, and they involved in this type of life, they also are enamored with the music world. And so what we did was offer them a way to come in where it was free for them to deal with the music, to write their music, record their music. I mean, this is just one avenue. What I'm saying is that with Muhammad's economic blueprint, but just on a basic level, those of us who are in a position to offer them, let's say if a sister don't have anywhere to stay, why aren't we, as a group, setting up some type of group housing? Others have it. It's a question. As a group, in unity, why aren't we providing some type of, even if it's not going to work for everybody, but some of them, if we provide them with some type of employment. In other words, if we answer whatever the need is that leads them to go in this direction, then we can save some, you know. And, I mean, that's more of a statement. My question is this, though, and it's along the lines of what Brother Abraham was asking. The thing is that when are we, or what processes are in place right now that are being implemented right now to address these problems? I saw a program last night, as a matter of fact, on Nat Geo, where they were in Houston, and they're talking about how, as opposed to criminalizing the victims, criminalizing them. They actually call them victims. They arrest them and get them off the street, get them away from the pimp. But then they also have in place places where they can go to get away from this if they so choose. So what are we as a nation, what are we as a people in the Nation of Islam as soldiers of Allah doing along those lines? That's my question.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you.
Thank you,
Brother
James. Kareem.
Yes,
was that directed to me, Brother Kareem, or to our esteemed panelists?
This is directed toward our panelists.
Okay, very good.
That's what I'm asking.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. You know, and I'll preface it by saying this, in all honesty, yet again, the woman. She's trapped into this situation, brother. I don't know, let me just say something that comes to mind, you know, because we can advocate, but then there'll be one that says, you know, like when we say to women, stop calling each other female dogs and otherwise, those, you know, we don't have a problem with it, why should you? You know, there's a comedian named Samore that does a bit that says everybody's always talking about stop calling the bees and whores, but the problem is the bees and whores haven't stopped, haven't complained about it yet. You know, I say that to say that economics alone for the female, solving all of the female's problems, we could, in my view, in my uneducated opinion, we could lay everything the black woman needs right now at her doorstep. Talent, car, job, money, what do you want? Here you go, sister. That will not stop her from being victimized by these men. Victimized by the men who lure and kidnap her into that, or by those who are the patrons who create the demand. The demand is there. The demand, in my view, has been there since the time we were enslaved, taken from, and forced into breeding. So that's one opinion I have about it, you know, when we talk about the woman. Why is it there? Now, on the other hand, there are groups and organizations that supply that. I'm sure. I don't have any resource names about it, but I'm sure there is an individual male or female follower of Minister Farrakhan that has or is part of an organization that provides services. I know that there's a sister, I'm sorry I don't remember her name, but I can get it to Brother James and Sister Queen Aziz after the show. I'll look for it. But there's a sister on Facebook, I see her often, who provides assistance for domestic violence. And I believe that this is a form of domestic violence. And it doesn't just occur by outsiders. Sometimes we're pimped right in our own family. So that's one part of my answer. The other part, I'll try to make it brief. I see the time, Brother James. My other part of the answer is that notwithstanding those organizations, the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the MGT and the FOI class, the mosque, the ideal mosque environment is the number one program that we are putting forth in real-time effort that is a solution to this, because sure, as Allah willing, the sun will come up tomorrow. When a person hits that spirit, that quickening of a spirit, we have the stories of what Islam has done for me. Dropped the crack pipe in a minute. Left the drug house in a minute. Put the kilos on the table, walked away from the gut. Talk to Brother Student Minister Tony Muhammad, tells you he's taking a
That's
hit.
Right.
As Minister Farrakhan is praying, I'm talking about the student Western Regional Minister, my minister, tells us all the time he's in there, they cutting up the coke or whatever that stuff is. And the minister's talking, and he flushes it down the toilet. That's the program. Immediate resurrection. Immediate. It doesn't take a long time. It didn't take a lot of money. It took, what, a $10 tape, if that was the cost at the time? And so we have the program. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has the program. But as you say, Brother Kareem, and, you know,
everybody's not going to have that or come this way. We're running from Islam, pardon me. So we do have to have those practical application places. But I just wanted to say in no uncertain terms, well, I think that any of those will do what the program can and has proven to do. For God's sake, look at us. We're here, and we didn't fall from heaven. I sure didn't. I didn't. So that's. I pray I've answered your question.
Thank you, Sister Charlene. Thank you, Brother Kareem. Wonderful to hear your voice there, brother. I was calling on you earlier in the show, but glad to hear from you, as always, dear brother. And as we are closing this show out, and I want to thank you again, Sister Charlene, for what you have shared with us, particularly in your article. I'm going to ask the listening audience, if you have not read that article, go back to the final call of November 5th and read that article, Beaten, Abused, Forced into Slavery, Sex Slavery, How and Why Black Girls Are Increasingly Trapped in Prostitution. This, again, is by our sister Charlene Muhammad, national correspondent to the Final Call newspaper. Thank you.
And before
thank
you go, Brother James, I want to say something, but I'm going to let you go ahead and finish.
Well, what I'd like to do, and I'm going to do this quickly so that you can certainly share with us what you wanted to share, but what I wanted to say was that all of what we see happening in the community is symptomatic of an underlying problem, and that problem is poverty and want. Of course, there is a moral component, and it is the component of the absence of the knowledge of our God and the knowledge of ourselves. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is addressing in real terms the undergirding problem of the lack of the ability to maintain our women economically, to maintain our communities economically, and to provide for us what we need and what we are foolishly petitioning our enemies to provide for us. So we're asking everyone to participate in the economic blueprint, Muhammad's economic blueprint. Go to www.economicblueprint.org. And for those of you who want the immediate information to contribute, you can make your donations of check, or money order, payable to Muhammad's Economic Blueprint and care of Seaway Bank and Trust Company to the attention of Sherilyn Russell at P.O. Box 19522, Chicago, Illinois, 60619. Once again, that's Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, care of Seaway Bank and Trust Company, to the attention of Sherilyn Russell, P.O. Box 19522, Chicago, Illinois. Go to www.muhammadseconomicblueprint.org. Thank you for allowing me to make that announcement. And Sister Aziza, the floor is yours.
All praises due to Allah. You know, Brother James, you know how I am. You know, I hold a lot in sometimes. But sometimes when Allah puts something on your spirit, you just have to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is one of those
That's
times. And, you know, I just want to say, you know, I've been doing this for almost 2 years, so a lot of you that call in and a lot of you that visit me in the chat room, especially you brothers, you've been such faithful and loving followers, and I thank Allah for you all. And you all were mighty quiet tonight, especially the brothers. The brothers are very quiet tonight. And I just want to tell you that, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us, as it has been
quoted and stated here tonight, that there is no such thing as a no good woman. A woman is made no good by a no good man.
Mm-hmm.
But he also teaches us that this earth, this universe, belongs to the original man and woman. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad also teaches us that we are the gods of this earth, and that he has given us dominion over this earth. Now, slavery, the atrocity of slavery, is something that we as a people have yet to recover from. However, we as Muslims, and particularly who claim that when we heard the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that we came into the knowledge of self. And inshallah, we did. But that knowledge of self also identifies a responsibility that you have to your nation, and especially to your women, because the women will grow up to be somebody's mother, somebody's grandmother. She's going to be an influence on some other little girl at some point in her life, and I am not jumping on my brothers. I have biological brothers, so I'm not man-hating. But I tell you, Sister Charlene, growing up in Compton, where I grew up, right around the corner from the area known as the jungle back in that day, I was never afraid to walk the streets. I was never afraid to be on my porch at night because, you know, I'm from the first, and nobody messed with the MGT because the FOI put the fear of God in man.
That's right.
In regular man.
That's right.
They put the fear of God in men in the community. Anybody touch an MGT, you might as well start writing your eulogy. It's over. And that is the kind of power, and that is the kind of influence that men need to have impacted in the communities today to protect our babies.
Mm-hmm.
It should
That's
never
right.
be any such thing as a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old being pimped out for sex, whether
Go
it's
ahead.
Her choice or not. She wouldn't have a choice if our brothers would take on the moral responsibility, and it does not end at your door.
Go ahead, sister.
Allah has given you the earth, and you want to cut your portion off at the front porch. The men are the maintainers of all women, your mothers, your aunts, your cousins, your nieces, your sisters, your wives, your neighbors, your friends. Men are the maintainers of all women. And on one hand, you complain about a woman being independent, but if you leave her out there as, you know, as a prey, you leave her to the predators, then what is she supposed to think? So it's not your fault. It's not your fault. I'm not naming,
right.
shaming, and blaming, but I want men to recognize that the power of the FOI, because I can bear witness to that power.
That's
I
right.
love my brothers. I thank Allah for the training that they receive because I know what it feels like to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
That's
really
true.
Safe in my community. I know what it's like to turn a corner and you could almost be arrogant and dare somebody to look at you cross-eyed because not only did you have one brother, two brothers, three brothers coming, I got 11 coming from my house and I got 150 coming from my mouth for you. Just for you, all because of me.
Right?
That's right.
So, brothers, you have a moral responsibility. It is your moral authority. It is your duty to protect all women. And some women are going to give it to you. They ain't none of your business. Get out of my face. Cuss you out. Yeah, they're going to do that. They're going to do that because they don't have the knowledge of self. But if you approach them with love.
That's right.
If you approach them with love, not with authority, but with love. If you listen to the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said Master Farah Muhammad wooed him.
That's right.
He approached him with love. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't care what nobody say. I'm a full-fledged woman. Brother, come to me with love. I can't do nothing but receive. You hear me?
Go ahead.
And I bear witness to that. I have a networking family, and I can safely say, I know Brother James loves me. I know Brother Kareem loves me. I know Brother Jihad loves me. I know Brother Vernon loves me. I know they love me. Because they will correct me when I'm wrong. They'll praise me when I'm doing good. And that's all out of love. So if you approach a sister with love, then she will receive. But you have to pick up that burden, or if you, that's what you want to call it, but you have to assume that duty. And I just wanted to say that. I'm going to be quiet. And before I allow Brother James to close, Sister Charlene, my dear sister, thank you for coming on the show tonight. I am personally so honored to have you. And I want to tell people, I tell people this all the time. A lot of people think we're all in the nation. We all have Blog Talk Radio shows. We are not in competition with one another. We are all doing
That's right.
We can do to help
the Honorable
Minister Louis Farrakhan deliver the message. So this is my sister in spirit and in love and in social media. So thank you, my dear sister, for joining
us tonight.
Yes, ma'am.
No, thank you for enriching me. I just put a post. I'm like, Queen Aziza dropping spiritual bombs. But no,
sister,
the pleasure is mine. I'm learning so much, you know. You invited somewhere to give, but you always receive so much more. I am grateful to be on.
Yes, ma'am. All praise to you, Tala. We are honored to have you, Queen. So thank you.
And I'm just
reiterate
that.
I'm going to give you back your show, and I'm going to shut up.
That's all right, dear sister. This is our show. And on that note, I want to thank you for extending to me this wonderful opportunity to host this most relevant forum. And if it had not been for you extending me this opportunity, dear sister, I wouldn't be here on this show. And the name that we both came up with together, Put On The New Man, had it not been for the extension of this opportunity to me, then I wouldn't, nor would the audience, be benefiting from what has taken place in the few months that we've been on the air. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And, of course, thank you, our faithful and loyal listening and participating audience.
Yes, sir.
Thank you ever
so much. Well, Brother James, like I always tell you, brother, you are the blessing. And I was trying so hard to get the clip, but, you know, I wanted to say, because I know I've been out of commission for a few days, you know, Brother James, you are such a rare gem amongst the FOI, and I'm not just saying that, but, brother, whether people know it or not, Brother James, you've been doing this for 40 years. Most people can't commit to anything for 40 years. And, brother, I tell you, the knowledge, the wisdom, the love, the passion, the understanding that you have of these teachings are so, so beneficial to our nation, to me personally, but to our nation. You have no clue, you have no idea of how many people
have, if you ever go on the events page, how many people say, I stood up under Brother James. And how they just gravitate because, you know, that you are here. And you've been here for a very long time. So, you know, you always tell me thank you. But, brother, I have to be honest with you. I thank you so very much. And I don't take it for granted. I love you, and I really appreciate
you
coming on to the network and making it what you make it. So, brother, all praise is due to Allah for you. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. All praise is due to Allah. And very little to say. I am humble.
Don't say nothing.
But all praise is due to Allah. Yes, and we are.
Receive.
I will receive. Thank you. And we are past the time. But here again, I want to thank again Sister Charlene for taking the time to be with us, dear sister. Your wonderful work with the final call and this magnificent and moving article. And again, I urge and encourage everyone listening to go back to that final call and read the final call every week. But go back to that particular final call of November 5th, and on the page 3, in fact, it's the front page article. Beaten, abused, forced into sex slavery. How and why black girls are increasingly trapped in prostitution. Thank you again, dear sister, and may Allah continue to bless you in your work.
Thank you.
I know the time. You're very welcome, dear sister. And Sister Aziz, I know the time is far spent. However, would you like to give the lineup?
Yes, sir. We'll be right back here tomorrow, 8 p.m. Central, with Sister Yatira X out of Tampa, Florida. She's going to be doing a segment, and I forgot what it was, Sister Yatira. I'm so sorry. Shoot me later. But she'll be here at 8 o'clock tomorrow on Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Join Brother Vernon Muhammad as he talks about No Romance Without Finance, our economic development show. And on Monday, I think we still have Brother Kareem on the phone. Brother Kareem, would you like to give us a sneak peek at the topic on Monday?
Yes, ma'am. All praises be to Allah. Monday, inshallah, you know, I say that as a statement, not as a question. We will be discussing how to give birth to a God.
Yes, sir.
All
yes,
right.
Sir.
Wow.
Listen, I love to entertain my audience, so I have to take this question. 773, your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum, family.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Rocky.
This is me. I've been on the show all along listening to this wonderful program. Brother James doing a wonderful job as usual. Sister Charlene, we definitely are honored to have you on the show, sister. Praise be to Allah. Brother Kareem, always a pleasure.
Yes,
sister Gidget, always doing the thing. Praise be to Allah.
Well, for those of you who may not know, because he always so absent, this is the founder and CEO of Nation Building Movement. Brother Rakim, I sometimes show up, Muhammad.
I said to myself, and you said, and she named all those people she loved. She didn't say she loved me. That's okay, though. But anyway, this is what I...
Well, you didn't tell them that you were my twin brother either, did you?
Oh, yes. And sister, we got a birthday coming up real soon. Birth of a God and God's anniversary coming up real soon. Speaking of birth of a God, Brother Kareem said the subject next Monday will be how to give birth to a God. That is beautiful. But this is what I want to say. I told Sister Gidget last week that, was it last week? Week before last. I've been working my butt off, but I said I'm gonna do my best to participate in more of Nation Building shows. And so, therefore, that is the reason that I'm on here tonight, in order to congratulate
everybody.
He's
not here because of a death threat, that's all.
I congratulate Brother James for such a wonderful show.
Yes.
Thank you.
Job well done, brother. Job well done.
All praise
this is the professor.
Thank you.
This is the doctor of Islam right here, the doctor.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir,
okay.
But I'm not going to take too much of your time.
Oh, thank you, dear brother. All praise is due to Allah. It's wonderful to hear your voice.
Yes, sir.
To meet you. I can't wait to meet you, brother. I hope you'll be in Detroit.
Oh, yes,
you didn't
sir.
See him you didn't see him in Alabama, Brother James?
I don't think our paths crossed.
Oh, okay.
Mm. You know something, I was on post the whole while.
Oh, okay. All right, listen, we're going to close this out.
Sister Queen, this is Brother James. May I say one thing that I forgot to say, but I don't want to, if I can. I want to say I just thank Allah and thank the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan, our
That's
publisher,
right.
for the final call, for permitting me to write for the publication, to be associated in any way, and also the editor, who is very supportive and really guides and is very helpful. And if I could just say congratulations to our new assistant editor, not new in terms of replacing the assistant editor we have, but we have another assistant editor along with Brother Ashad Muhammad, Sister Starla, our staff writer in Chicago, our new assistant editor. And so thank you for letting me say that. I didn't want to forget that, to thank the minister and also throw the sisters some
That's
love,
right.
and may Allah bless you, Sister Starla, in your post. Thank you for letting me say that.
By all means.
Yes.
Our sentiments are the same, dear sister.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, listen, Tuesday, 8 o'clock, out on the front line with the Food of Islam. Wednesday, 7 o'clock, DJ Black Season and Friends. And on Thursday, I'll be back here live, up front and personal. I know it's been a minute, but I will be back this week. And we're going to be talking about, I am going to be talking about the restrictive laws versus deceptive intelligence.
That sounds deep.
And of course, next Friday we'll be right back here with Student Minister James Muhammad. So, to all of you, I thank you. I thank you for your inboxes. I can't answer everybody, but I am fine. I have just been working. I've been rehearsing for a concert that I'm doing this Sunday in honor of the memory of Gerald Levert, and we're raising money for the American Cancer Society. So I have been busy, but I'm fine. Thank you. I love you. Thank you for your support. I miss you all, too. And I promise you, after this Sunday, when everything is said and done, I will be back on schedule. I'll be up in your face every day inviting you to all the shows. So thank you for all your prayers and support. Thank you, Sister Charlene, Brother James, Brother Kareem. Oh, my God, this brother has been my backbone through it all. I love you. Thank you. Don't take you for granted. I owe you lunch, dinner, breakfast. I owe you everything, so I'm going to hook you up. And thank you so much. And thank you, Brother Rakim, for coming up out the concrete and hollering at a family. So thank you so much. Good
Praise
night to you all.
Allah.
One nation, one love.
Praise be to Allah.
Welcome.
Wa alaikum
salam.